We are lucky to sit down today, virtually, of course, with Damon Mott's story. Damon is the Health Climate Program Director at Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, an organization of health professionals and advocates that work with the community to educate and advocate for societal and policy change, all with the goal of protecting human health across the board. In the time of demonstrating against police brutality in our city of Portland, their work continues to be extremely relevant. Damon,
thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Damon, tell us about Physicians for Social Responsibility and a little about your role there.
Sure. So we came out of the movement to stop nuclear weapons during the Cold War. So a group of doctors and scientists worked together to conclusively show that there was this presence of radioactive particles in children's teeth near where nuclear weapons testing was occurring. And Physicians for Social Responsibility actually shared in the Nobel Peace Prize for that work in 1985, because it was such a helpful contribution in understanding that nuclear weapons have this horrible impact on people's health and livelihoods, even if they're not actually used in warfare. Of course, if they're used, it's absolutely devastating, and we have the position that we must never use these immoral weapons ever again, and that is sort of the roots of our organization. We've also seen that, you know, the philosophy of preventing what we cannot cure applies to nuclear weapons and the threat of nuclear war, and realized in the 90s and 2000s that those same issues are present with climate change as well. We have to prevent what we cannot cure in terms of the really catastrophic climate change scenarios. And I think that the same can also be said about militarism in both the way that the U.S. has been working in foreign countries, as well as domestically with an increasingly militarized set of police forces in different cities, and now with the federal occupation of Portland being a prime example of something where we have to stop this violence in order to preserve public health and safety of the people that are protesting using their First Amendment rights.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little about less lethal, or what some people are even calling non-lethal, munitions and how they're not actually what they claim to be.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking about this. You know, we started to witness what was happening as the protests for Black Lives Matter started to emerge in Portland, and were extremely disturbed by the ways that the Portland Police Bureau was responding to nonviolent protesters using tear gas and so-called, you know, impact munitions, and labeling all of these different weapons as non-lethal or less lethal, in order to make it sound like the encountering these and being exposed to these is no big deal, right? That it's meant to really downplay the impact that these substances have on people. And we really, you know, made sure to reprioritize and spend some concerted time and effort on addressing this issue, because we saw how urgent it was to call that narrative out and redefine it and make sure people know the severe health impacts of these weapons. Especially as we are in the midst of a rising respiratory pandemic, and case infection rates in Oregon for COVID-19 continue to increase. So it's already extremely unethical to use tear gas on a massive crowd of protesters where, you know, maybe only a few people are throwing water bottles or empty cans at riot cops in full body armor, to then decide that that whole crowd needs to be exposed to this dangerous tear gas compound that can cause all kinds of viral illnesses, pneumonia, bronchitis, that following exposure. And also, you know, some people are reporting weird menstrual symptoms after being exposed to this material. People live in the neighborhoods that are nearby these protests happening, and a lot of people have been complaining about gas making its way into their homes and impacting themselves and their children as bystanders. And so we're seeing just a huge amount of impacts from just the tear gas alone. But then we've also seen, you know, that protester who was carrying a boombox who was shot by a rubber bullet to the skull by federal officers. in what is very clearly an example of how that can kill somebody. And he was very lucky to survive and is recovering well, but that was, I think, a good proof that these weapons can kill you, and the tear gas in particular massively increases the chances that coronavirus will spread among protesters and compromises people's respiratory systems at a time when we need them to be as strong as possible.
And what about chronic tear gas exposure, like night after night?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And we've been advocating for stronger preventions against the use of tear gas at the state level and locally, and supporting the efforts of activists and protesters that have been pushing for a stop on the use of this material, because we don't really necessarily know exactly how people are going to be experiencing symptoms of continuing to be exposed to this time and time again. And I've seen that a lot of people are taking the efforts to make sure that they have like gas masks and things like that to limit their exposure. I think that's incredibly smart that they're doing that, because to be out there, you know, for example, as a journalist covering these protests night after night, it's one really should be concerned about the chronic and repeated exposure to this substance. Because we know that in most cases, the more you are exposed to a air contaminant or a lung irritant, the more that compounds the risk of developing more serious respiratory illnesses and other kinds of symptoms. So we need to see an end to it as a harm reduction for the people exercising First Amendment rights to nonviolently assemble. And there's a really great blog post by Erica Mosesson that says, "Non-lethal tear gas, not likely." And that's the headline of it. We've been sharing that around. That's a really great piece of work by a pulmonologist in our area who basically just wrote a long post about how dangerous and how scary this is to see this being used so much on protesters, including children. What that impact could be on people's bodies, both short term and long term.
Yeah, it's really interesting in that piece that you mentioned by Dr. Moses, and she talks about how physicians are required to use de-escalation tactics, which isn't really their job, but is essentially like a 100% a police officer's job.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's really a lesson to be learned from the way that health professionals deal with people in crisis that other people need to start taking really seriously. And I really hope that, you know, that lesson can be internalized by everybody who's looking at the way our policing system is failing to meet community needs, especially in the needs of Black and Indigenous and people of color's needs. You know, doctors and nurses and other health professionals have long understood that you need to work with your patients and to really help set them at ease. And when somebody's experiencing crisis, you know, doctors and nurses know that it's time to use de-escalation tactics to help people calm down. And we know what works in de-escalating and helping people to you know, get back to a more stable and more reasoned frame of mind. And we're seeing just the polar opposite of that happen when police show up already decked out in, you know, head to toe riot gear and body armor. That it does the opposite of de-escalation. It makes people's adrenaline spike. It makes people expect a conflict. It makes them feel like they've been made into the enemy. That makes them feel like they've been made to be expected to be dangerous. And that sets up this polarization and this dichotomy of us versus them, by very nature of the way that police are showing up to demonstrations. And that's not just the federal law enforcement officials, that's the Portland police as well. One thing I really hope that folks who are watching Portland from other parts of the country and other parts of the world, I really hope that they understand that both federal officers and local officers have been tear gassing people and using these dangerous riot control munitions, that both of them are culpable for escalating these protests that have been largely very peaceful and very nonviolent. So it's my hope that we can look to some of the models of healthcare clinicians to help inform us in figuring out what kind of a community safety model we want to see. And then that will help to guide us as we continue to work to defund the police and invest in solutions that actually work, and invest in anti-racist solutions and policies that can be doing so, that are built by the ground up by Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And that's, that's where I would actually also critique health professionals as well, right? We need to also understand that a lot of Black and Indigenous and people of color have deep trust issues with our medical system because of, very real racism that exists in our medical systems and in our healthcare clinicians. A very recent survey said that 40% of new medical students in 2016 believed that Black people had fewer nerve endings and didn't experience pain as much as white people, which is just junk science and racist. So, we got lots of work to do in lots of different arenas, but thinking about de-escalation and community safety is what I hope that we all are looking at in each of our different sectors.
Sort of on that same note, can you talk a little bit about how tear gas and these other tactics disproportionately harm communities of color?
For sure. So, one thing I will say is that let's not forget why people are out on the streets, right? We've just been seeing the continued killing and lynching of George Floyd, of Breonna Taylor, of Tony McDade, of so many trans women of color across the country. There's just such an epidemic of racialized violence, and these protests are about pushing back on that violence. And I think, I've noticed that the Black Lives Matter hashtag has not been appearing as often in a lot of social media circles about the protests. And what we need to remember is that this is a racial justice cause. And that means that there are going to be a lot of Black and Brown people who are out at protests and marching for justice and demanding for justice. And that means that when those folks are out on the ground, they're going to be coming into exposure with whatever the police is lobbing at the crowd writ large. And we know from data and so many studies that police assume that Black and Brown people are going to be dangerous in a very, severe form of implicit bias. And what that means is that we've seen time and time again that police use excessive force, as well as crowd control munitions, much quicker and much more readily when the crowd has more Black and Brown people in it than say a predominantly white crowd. But then we also see too that a lot of white people are coming into exposure with these chemicals and having these gases deployed on them and being fired at by these munitions simply because they're out on the on in these protests and are seen as a threat because of it. So I would say that it's all connected to the ways that racialized bias has caused police officers and really everyone in our society to believe the racist myth that Black and Brown people are dangerous, and that's just not true.
Damon, before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Thanks. Yeah, I would just say, like, we need to be really, this is a time where we need to be really active in watching what is happening to our civil liberties. The federal law enforcement that has been grabbing people and putting them into unmarked vans, that should be concerning everyone across the entire country. But we need to make sure that the local police are receiving the same scrutiny. There's now been protests for over 50 consecutive days in Portland. And for much of that time, it was just the Portland Police Bureau gassing and using riot control impact munitions on peaceful, largely peaceful protesters. And that needs to be worrying everybody. And we have to make sure that that's the focus is on both our local police and our federal law enforcement. And we must demand justice to make sure that both are not allowed to use tear gas, which is banned in the use of warfare by the Geneva Convention.
Damon, we really appreciate the important work you do. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to an interview with Damon Mott's story of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Find out more about the incredibly important work they're doing at OregonPSR.org.